As we always do every Friday morning, it's a visit with Ben Fred and Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We call this Ben Fred Fridays. Ben has been with us basically since day one of Scoops with DannyMac.com. Hey, Ben, we've got an actual game, a local game to talk about that doesn't involve basketball. How about that? Huh? How about that?
Pretty exciting, and pretty exciting to have NHL back, have the Blues back. And what a game to start out the Blues season on.
A couple nights ago was great.
Night, Dan. I mean, hey, talk about, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity. You're going against the team that's favored to win your division, and you come out and you score, you know, four unanswered goals after falling behind early. And it wasn't the stars exactly, but showing the depth of this team on a night where you don't have one of the new additions in Mike Hoffman. Jordan Binnington looks sharp. I mean, there cannot have been a better opening statement for the Blues. Now they get to go back and play Colorado right over again on this road trip to start the season. But, man, talk about a way to open it. That could not have gone better.
I'm fascinated now that we're going to see it. I saw it on paper, you know, kind of the not the back-to-backs because it's not, you know, within a, let's say, 24, 48-hour period. But you got the day off and then you're going to play tonight. I'm fascinated by what happens tonight, what adjustments get made, how chippy it starts to get. Some of this stuff is going to get flat out nasty now because it was already getting a little bit. Now I was watching the NHL two nights ago, watching again last night, and it was getting nasty already. And we're in the early portion of the season. These guys are going to see each other eight times. So I'm really fascinated by what happens tonight, the adjustments and the physicality of the game.
Yeah, I mean, Colorado's got to be thinking, okay, we got to prove to everybody we're the Stanley Cup favorites here, especially in the West. I mean, wait until the Blues start playing Vegas, man. I mean, you tell me that Krug is not going to – or Clifford is not going to put a hit on Petrangelo early in that first game, and Ryan Reeves will be looking to put a hurting on somebody as retaliation, man. These guys, the cool thing about this shortened season, and nobody likes to see a season shortened because of COVID, but if there's a silver lining here, it's going to be the intensity of this season. You know, they dropped the games down significantly. There's none of that. Well, the games don't really count until after the calendar turns.
Well, they're like 4-point swings with these games. That's the thing.
This is pretty much a dead out sprint. And, you know, any team knows that, hey, if the idea of having a long cold streak, well, you do that and you're in trouble. So, and I think there's a real nice kind of, it's not the familiar traditional rivalries, it's not the Blackhawks, but there's real, you know, present rivalries budding in this conference between the Avalanche and Vegas. I mean, I think the Blues have to feel a little motivated by the fact that they're looked at as so far less likely to win this thing in the West than those other two teams. I thought the Blues, you know, from a betting perspective, were probably a pretty good bargain bet. To either win the cup or at least come out of the West when you have, you know, the Avalanche and Vegas favored by so much more. And we saw in game one exactly why I think that. I think people are underestimating Jordan Binnington. I think this team is crazy deep. When you got Oscar Sundquist, who can bump up a line and score two goals in a game, when you got Clifford, who no one expects scoring from, finds a way to score up really the game sealing goal in opening night. They can score in a lot of different ways. They don't have Mike Hoffman, who they hope is back ASAP. They also don't have Vladimir Tarasenko, who's another 30 goal type scorer. So they're good now, and they should be getting better as the season progresses.
Well, you just let me in. I mean, to what I was going to talk about, which is their depth 5-on-5, and watching how
crazy
they played two nights ago. 5-on-5 reminded me last night of the Blues in the playoffs, where line after line coming over the boards, here comes another wave. Oh, those guys are, oh, here comes another wave. That's the way that they played on Wednesday night. And that's why you look at this team, even the other night, minus Hoffman, minus Tarasenko, there are waves of players coming at you that could score and play physical and had speed. And that's the other thing. Kyrou, I thought, had a good game. So, you know, it was a nice intro to 2021 for him. So I look at this team, it's one game, but it does give you some excitement. So let's talk about Robert Thomas centering that line the other night. Robert Thomas is a flat-out stud. There is no other way to put it. The guy is a stud. He's only going to get better and better. Man, is he fun to watch.
Yeah, he didn't look too rusty, did he?
I wouldn't say so.
Dropping passes between opponent's legs for goals to his teammates and just grinning like a fool as he's doing it. Because I think this guy, I mean, truly, I think he's one of these guys who would rather deliver a pass like that that leads to a goal than he gets as much joy out of that as he does scoring his own goal. And there aren't very many guys who can pass like that, who play like that, and I think really get as much joy out of helping a teammate find a goal than scoring one himself. He's going to do this with Hoffman too. I know there's going to be debate about whether or not, you know, Hoffman should immediately return in that spot that Sundqvist bumped up to. I know it's hard to move a guy out when he scores two goals in a game. It'll be curious to see how Berube handles that. But hey, whatever he does, you got to at this point trust in Berube, because it was his call to bump Sundqvist up to that line after the news that Hoffman did not have his work visa in time to play, and it looked genius. I mean, Berube has, I mean, countless times we saw it during the championship run, but he kind of has a good feel. He could have really scrambled the lines. He said, no, we're going to change him as little as possible. You know, we'll push Sundqvist up, and you know, that creates more of an opportunity for a guy like Sammy Blay, and it worked out great. So I would imagine, just based off of, you know, kind of why they went out and got Hoffman and their need to and desire to hope that he hits the ground running too, that he's in there where they hope to play him as soon as he's good to go. Now, you know, if that struggles, then I think you got to revisit that Sundqvist equation. Maybe they slow play it a little bit, kind of like a guy who hits a home run in a new spot in the lineup. You don't change it right away, but you know, they got to try to get Hoffman going here too. And they don't want to give him a sign of not feeling confident in his ability. They had him slotted there for a reason. And part of that reason was Thomas, who hit, I think that Schwartz, Thomas, Hoffman line is really, really exciting. And I'm with you, man. I think a big story in game one was Kyrou. Look, this guy, they're giving him opportunity and they're telling him, hey, you've got to do the little things, but we're trusting in your scoring ability. For him to go out and find that goal, I think it takes some pressure off him. I think it reinforces what the Blues are doing and trying to have a, you know, some offense plus young guy. As long as he does that and doesn't, you know, cut corners on the little things, he's going to be in there. And I think he's really got a chance to rack up some goals, because there's going to be so much attention on these other lines. He'll have an opportunity to break out and really secure himself. It's time. This has got to be his year for that.
Absolutely. I want to go back to Binnington. He was my number one key coming into the season, and you mentioned that he was sharp. And if they get Jordan Binnington of two nights ago, this team's going to win a lot of games. And then you go look at what the backup is, Ville Husso. And they've talked about, you know, Husso potentially playing, let's say, 15 to 17 games. So, Ben, that's 30 to 34 points that are, I don't want to say on his shoulders, but he would be the guy that's in those games. The goaltending, anytime a goalie gets hot, even if the guys in front of him are bad, they can win a game in hockey. That's just the way it works. But if he's like he was two nights ago, then you're talking about a team that is rolling. Because, again, 5-on-5, very strong. We think that the power play is going to be very good over the course of the season. If you get solid goaltending like that, watch out. The Blues all of a sudden become, without question, one of the better teams in the league, which we think they are, but that solidifies it.
Yeah, that's the question mark, right? Is it Binnington from the bubble, or is it Binnington who led the Blues to the Stanley Cup championship? And he looked like the latter in game one. And he said, you know, entering the season, somebody was asking about looking back to his time in the bubble, and he kind of said, look, if I'm going to look back, I'm going to look back to all the good stuff that I've done. And it was a perfect Jordan Binnington type response, confident, maybe a little cocky, but that's kind of what you want. When Binnington's letting those one-liners rip, that's when he's playing well. And I think we're seeing that, a return of that guy. He was locked in. Now, the Avalanche, for being such a offensively powerful team, they didn't get a ton of great looks at him. The Blues really, the Blues dominated the possession, especially late. I mean, they had one of those shifts lasted forever. I mean, the Avalanche were practically passing out on the defensive end of the ice. So, but when he was tested, he was strong, only let in the one power play goal, made a really nice save later in the game. He looked locked in, and he looked like the guy who can go out and win you a game. Now, they don't need to make him do that very often. Hopefully they won't. But he looks prepared. He looks like he's hit reset. And that's kind of what I expected from him. It was hard for me to imagine him being able to be that good for as long as he was during this championship run and all of a sudden crumbling after the bubble blow up. No one played well in that bubble. The Blues were checked out as a team, and they've admitted it as much since then. So I think he's going to be good. And I'm curious to see what we see in Huso. They're going to have to play him some, but hopefully not too much, because that means there's trouble with Jordan.
Absolutely. The winter warm-up is here. Unfortunately, we can't congregate downtown. I always looked at this as the unofficial kickoff to the baseball season. It's going to be different. The virtual warm-up, there are some of the free options for fans to go to cardinals.com, and you can see visits with some of the front office members, and then there's some paid experiences as well, and all the money goes to Cardinals Care. I always look forward to the winter warm-up because it's also, for me, we go out on the caravan, and I'm stuck in a van. I say stuck in a van, and I'm okay with that, but it's fun. You know, we're with some of the players, the young players. You get to know them. There's no other thing to do, Ben, when you're on a caravan than talk with the players for 4 or 5 hours. They're trapped. They can't get away from us. So it's great to build relationships in that regard with some of the young players. And then the best part is being interactive with the fans and seeing them and thanking them for their support. So I'm disappointed that we don't get the chance to do that, because I love doing that, and I love the winter warm-up. I think it's a great thing that the Cardinals do. So usually there's kind of, I don't know if you would agree with this, there's always some kind of news that comes out of this, because you get these guys to talk. And when I say guys, I mean Mo and Mr. DeWitt and Bill DeWitt III, and maybe you get updates on things. And I'm sure we're going to get some of that as we go along throughout the weekend. But is there anything that you really want to hear coming out of the winter warm-up? For me, it would be just, hey, are we going to have a start of a regular season? Are we going to have a start of spring training? Because that's great. That means we got baseball. But what about for you? Is there something that you want to hear coming out of the winter warm-up?
Well, there's really a couple things, and we'll see how much the Cardinals brass gets into this, because it's interesting how they're handling it this year, and I think it will be compelling for fans, because there's all these different little kind of snippets of segments that you can join along online. For our purposes, me being one of the guys who likes the fact that they roll all the players and the manager and the general manager and the president through the interview room after those things, when we do them in person, that's great, because you can basically get enough interviews and stuff to really get a good grip on what things are going to look like come spring training. But that won't be the case this year. So I can complain about that to myself. No one else cares, which is fine. Everybody else gets to watch you host like every event online during this year. So those will be fun.
So if you're looking to go to sleep, just tune in to, no, I'm just
kidding. I'll keep an eye on them. It won't probably be as much Q&A type stuff where we can really dig in on topics, but the Cardinals are kind enough to let us kind of keep an eye on them and watch them to see if news comes out of them. But it really isn't a lot of news, but I hope that there is some clarity on two things. One, what the Cardinals are kind of planning on spring training looking like. And we keep hearing, you know, and Bob Nightingale had a report this week that as of now, it'll be regular spring training and regular 162 game season. Certainly, I think you can look around different leagues that are trying to do what baseball did last year and play a regular season without a bubble, and see that might be too optimistic. But perhaps because of the way things have to work due to the agreements between players and owners and the current collective bargaining agreement, they have to start with that in mind and then adjust as necessary. If that turns into a disaster at spring training, then I think we're probably back in the seat that we were in last year around this time, when then the two sides were trying to figure out what a single season agreement looks like. So that's one, that's kind of baseball at large, is what are the logistics going to look like? And then the other thing, of course, is Cardinals specific. The Cardinals, like every other National League Central team, have done a lot of nothing this offseason except for letting players go. Colton Wong, one example, but there's been a lot. The Cubs have cut salary. The Pirates have traded Josh Bell. The Reds traded their closer, Iglesias. I mean, it's on and on and on. The Brewers aren't bringing back Ryan Braun. I mean, you could build a really competitive team from the cast-offs from the NL Central as it stands right now, between Yadier Molina at catcher, and, you know, go from there. Will those guys be back with the Cardinals? I think that's something you hope comes out of this, some clarity on where things stand. Molina is making it sound like he would consider retiring if he doesn't get a deal that he wants, which to me, that makes me wonder if he's not getting the offers that he likes. He's not leveraging leaving to another team. He's leveraging playing for the Cardinals or retiring, it sounds more like right now, which I'm curious. I think he probably wants to play. Maybe there'll be some news on that, the Waino situation. But then subsequent to that, the offense, are they going to do something to find some sort of upgrade on an affordable, cheap, short-term deal for this offense, or one or two, and see who pans out at spring? Dan, my buddy James Wagner, who writes the New York Times, crunched these numbers. They won't surprise anybody, but they are still pretty alarming. I mean, something like close to 90% of free agents are still unsigned right now.
Right.
We've seen some big trades. We've seen like five or so teams that are loading up and really going for it, from the Padres to the White Sox to the Mets. But other than that, I mean, most of these free agents are out there. At some point, if they want to play in whatever 2021 looks like, they are going to have to accept some sort of deals. So there will be a rush on I think, cheap, affordable, short-term contracts. Are the Cardinals going to be in that mix? That would be really nice to get some sort of clarity on coming out of this winter warm-up.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to start to see, with the commissioner's memo to teams saying, hey, we're going to start on time, and if we start to see like the Liam Hendricks and some of the other bigger names come off the board and trickle down into free agency, and then as we get closer, that we do have a solidified date for spring, which isn't to say that that is not the memo that he sent out. I mean, he said it. He said, hey, we're going. Let's go. But that teams are saying, okay, now we know. And all right, this is our municipality that we live in, and there's no fans in the stands, or we can get 25%, or we can get 50, or by midsummer we're getting this, that, and the other. That they now understand their budget, they understand the needs on their roster, and we start to see these guys come off the board. I do wonder if that's going to start happening now that we do have a little clarification from the commissioner, because, hey man, we're 4.5-5 weeks away from spring training and game start. You got to have your team figured out. I'm not saying you can't have a Kyle Loesch move like the Cardinals did many years ago, which happens in spring training to solidify a pitching staff. And as you mentioned, there are a number of guys that are still out there. So patience is something that's been talked about a lot. But you just wonder if there'll be a little bit of loosening with that, with more of an idea of what you can spend and what the season looks like.
Dan, I mean, I think the Cardinals are in a spot where, I know fans don't want to hear this, And I understand why, and I'm with them that, hey, bring back Wainwright, Molina, find a way to improve the offense. I've been saying that from the beginning. I think that's a realistic request. It's not go out and make a crazy deal that adds a record contract to the payroll in a year where finances are not where the Cardinals hoped. I mean, but find a way to bring back the guys people want to see and then find a way to improve the offense. I still stand by that. I still think they can and should find a way to do that. But I also acknowledge reality. Right now, the Cardinals are looking around going, okay, we were a pretty good team last year in terms of our division. Everyone else in our division has gotten worse. We got a ton of pitching depth. We have some guys we think we could be better this year. You know, they're not feeling any pressure to go out and make a move to win this division. Sure. They might win it now. So, but the question again has to become, is any team from the Central that finds a way to win it going to do anything beyond that in the postseason? And right now the assumption would be, well, no, because, you know, this is going to be the worst division in baseball potentially. So being the best team in the worst division probably is not going to get you very far come the postseason. Are the Cardinals willing to just accept that fate? I hope not, because that would not mesh with kind of what they say about wanting to be relevant and really have a team that has a chance to contend every year. But here's the thing too, though, you can add hitters all throughout spring training. You know, if you go sign a hitter, a guy who can hit, whether the DH pops in late or a guy who can, you know, be a legitimate bat, he doesn't need weeks and weeks of spring training to get ready. I would not sign pitchers late. I mean, we saw how terrible that worked out for a guy like Greg Holland and some of his peers who came on late. Their timing was all messed up. Hitters don't need that much time. So the Cardinals can, and they've been stressing patience, they can sit around and wait and see which hitter is available late and make a cheap grab and throw them in the lineup, and it won't really ruin things. And those guys probably need a couple at bats to get tuned up more than they need a full spring training. And it's not like they won't have been training on their own anyway. So the start date of spring training does not have to be the drop dead date for the Cardinals to add offense. I wouldn't add a pitcher much later than that, just based off what we've seen recently.
Pretty amazing.
But they don't need pitching. They got tons of pitching still.
pretty amazing that you say, well, if the DH pops in late, and here we are in January and it's still not decided. That should tell you how far apart the players are from the owners, and it's not a partnership, and that's a problem. I mean, the other leagues have partnerships. I mean, there's going to be gripes between the two sides, but at the end of the day, there's a partnership to split the revenue. And right now there's not, and they can't even decide on a DH. And it's something that both sides, you talk to both sides, it sounds like they both want it, and yet it's not in because they have to give up something. And that to me is hard to believe, really hard to believe.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I mean, I was actually doing a radio show this week on KTRS, the big sports show. We had Greg Amsinger of MLB Network on, a St. Louis native, and like you, a proud alum of Lindenwood.
Yes, sir.
And Amsinger had a great analogy, and I've not heard it used this way before, but he talked about this kind of situation that the owners are in where, you know, they want to talk about, well, they got a hole in their roof, and they compare it to a house. They got a hole in the roof, and they go, oh, well, this house, you know, it stinks. We don't want to pay for these repairs. It's overpriced, and this isn't great. And you say, okay, well, the house is appreciated by X amount of percent, so just sell it if you don't want to fix it. Well, they don't want to sell it either. They just want to talk about the hole in the roof. Well, when your house is appreciated so much over time, then that's baseball right now. And as we continue to talk about that CBA that is going to be once again tiptoed up to, you know, in the conversations that are probably had when it comes out what 2021 looks like we did with 2020, these are all precursors to that big fight after the 2021 season. And everybody's worried about revenue and how the pandemic affected the game, players and owners. I mean, players are pushing for this 162 game season, even if it's unrealistic, because they are ticked. They only got to play 60 last year. This all has to be viewed from the scope of the CBA discussion. And I know people get tired of us continuing to talk about it, but it's real. And here, if baseball does not realize, this is my point that I'm taking a long way to get to, if baseball does not realize that it would do horrendous things for the game to be out of the pandemic, you know, headed toward a 2022 season, not 21-22 season, that could be in this sports boom of going back to stadiums and having everybody together and this kind of upward swing of sports returning as this big cornerstone of our society, and baseball finds some way to either not play that year because of a work stoppage or have a shortened year or have a strike or have a lockout, I don't think it realizes how much damage it could do to the game and to both parties, owners and players, long term, because people are going to want to have energy, enthusiasm and optimism and good times. They want to go to the ballpark and grab a beer with their buddies because they can now, and everybody's vaccinated. And if the fight then boils over to the point that there's not games after two seasons marred by a pandemic, that will push baseball back further than any of the other things that have set it back behind some of the other major sports. So I think we got to start banging that drum now, so both sides of this hear that and start to think about that as they talk about not only what 2021 will look like, but what 2022 is going to look like.
Yep, I would agree, and I totally agree, and it's well put. While I got you, local hoops, we want to see Mizzou and SLU get back on the hardwood, and I'll start with SLU. It could be about a month before they play another game. By my calculations, it'll be within a month. Hopefully they get back before then. I think it was the 30th of December was the game against Duquesne that was canceled that morning. We got word that they had a COVID case, and obviously it's running through their team a bit. Talked to Travis Ford this past week about it, and he said, hey, you know, very simply, we're just trying to keep guys safe and healthy and get back and do this properly, saying all the right things. But from a basketball perspective, you got to wonder how the guys have been able to handle it and then coming back and then all of a sudden just starting to play games. They were on a roll, and they're going to have to get back soon and get some of these games under their belt and try to get that rhythm back. It'll be really interesting to see how they bounce back.
Man, it's going to be tough to go a month without practicing or playing as a team and then all of a sudden jumping right back into conference games. They hadn't played a conference game yet, and it's kind of been odd. They've actually improved their standing since they haven't played. They're climbing up in the rankings. They're really well positioned in the net rankings, which the selection committee really leans on for the NCAA tournament committee. So that's been the good news. But yeah, I mean, my buddy's, you know, colleague at the Post-Dispatch, Stu Durando, is talking about they're sending them stationary bikes to have for their apartments and dumbbells, and they're doing team workouts on Zoom. You know, I don't know. You wonder how many guys have even had access to a basketball or a goal to shoot at. Missouri's in a bit of a similar spot, although they're hoping to be back in action on Saturday, so they won't have as long of a shutdown. It doesn't sound like theirs was as spread out throughout the team. The idea of playing COVID cop for these sports teams is crazy. I mean, we knew this risk was going to be in place. Lou went above and beyond to try to avoid this thing, and it still came and got them like it has for most of the teams in the A-10. I think every college basketball team in the country will have some sort of pause or issue at some point. They're not as big as football teams. They don't get to keep playing when they have a shutdown, because everyone on a college basketball team is a close contact. So with the Billikens, I think it's going to in Mizzou, I think it's going to come down to really discipline when you're not together, mental toughness and focus. You know, what are you doing mentally to prepare yourself to play when you get an opportunity again? And also that leadership. And the good news is both of those teams have guys who have been around, seniors who have a lot to play for. And, you know, that should help them kind of get back up to speed here. But, Dan, I mean, you go 2-3 days as a college basketball player without shooting.
It's an eternity.
And things are going to feel a little goofy.
Yeah.
So I think SLU will be okay. You have to play a minimum of 13 games to be considered for the NCAA tournament. They will very easily get to that. And the rankings and the net rankings really love them. So unless they come back and blow a tire, which is a realistic threat when you haven't played as long, they should be all right. I don't think they will play all of their games. That would be crazy. But they should be able to find a way to play the meaningful ones and then just have to roll with the fact that it's a weird year.
No surprise that Jordan Goodwin, Hassan French during the shutdown have said that they will forego what could be another year to come back and play for SLU. And they're going to go make money professionally somewhere, somehow. That's a given. The one that interests me is Javonte Perkins. Now, he's a senior, and he's finding out that he's the target of a lot of teams. You know, they know he is a scorer, man. He is smooth. I wonder if he takes advantage of another year and comes back and plays for SLU next season. And we're going to have those stories across the board in college sports of somebody that says, you know what, didn't have a great year, want to come back, want to improve my stock, want to see if I can get even better, and depending on where I go play beyond this year, if I have a year to play, but this is a chance to do it. I wonder if Perkins would be that guy.
I'll tell you what, Dan, I know what French and Goodwin have said. I also know that they said it before they missed a month of their senior season, and it's going to be a helter-skelter year. I don't know that what they said now is not binding.
Yeah.
They could change their mind.
For sure.
And they could change their mind after they hear more feedback from the NBA. And I've always said, unless a guy is pretty convinced he's a first-round pick, then he'd probably do himself more favors coming back. So I know what they said, and I believe him. I have no reason to think they were lying, but I do think sometimes opinions can change. I think both of those guys, you know, could benefit from another year, just as Perkins could. So unless Perkins gets back to doing what he was doing against LSU, against A-10 teams, then I think, yeah, he could benefit from another year kind of proving he can be an all A-10 type, you know, A-10 player of the year type scorer. So I'm not going to rush any of these guys off. You know, I get it if you want to go play pro and make money, but I don't know that any of them right now are locks to be first round NBA picks. They're not going to not be able to go overseas and make money if they come back to college for another year. So I'm going to wait and press pause on that one until I'm buying anything until we see what this season plays out. If suddenly SLU can't get to the tournament or can't play enough games or disaster strikes, then I bet those guys would change their mind perhaps. So I'm gonna say no one who, like any of us, making bold predictions about what we're going to do next year during this time of great uncertainty is probably not, you know, there's probably just not a lot of stock in that. Let's reevaluate when we get there.
Absolutely. Hey, Ben, we do it every Friday. Always love our conversations, and let's catch up next week.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.